Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Monday, February 20th. Barnard,
here.
Bebout,
here.
Burns,
here.
Case,
here.
Christensen,
here.
Coe,
here.
Cooper,
here.
Dockstader,
here.
Driscoll,
here.
Emmerich,
here.
Esquivel, Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Hines, Jennings,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Martin,
here.
Meyer, Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Platern,
here.
President Anderson,
here.
Meyer, 30 present.
Prayer by Reverend Gilbert.
President Anderson, Wyoming senators, support staff, thank you for the opportunity of allowing me to be your chaplain for this week, and also thank you for preserving this tradition of commencing each session with prayer. May we unite our minds in prayer. Almighty God, ruler of the nations, this day we offer our gratitude for Presidents Washington and Lincoln. In our youthful years, the picture of George Washington in our schoolrooms and the story of the cherry tree instilled into the fabric of our character the honor of being honest. Abraham Lincoln stands tall in his call for this nation to be one of unity and to be a land of equality for all. We remain eternally thankful for all men and women who are examples of exemplary living. We continually give thanks to you, O God, for parents and teachers, public servants and professional leaders, common folk and everyday friends who have lifted and continue to lift our lives to a higher level of living. May we likewise lift others to newness of life. On this President's Day, we ask your blessing to rest upon our nation's elected leaders, that they will know you to be their stay in trouble, their strength in conflict, and their guide in all decisions. We greet this day and this week in the confidence of your inward presence and your unwavering guidance. And all who are able in unison said, Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Reverend. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee report that the Journal of February the 17th, 2012, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Our doctor for today is Dr. Ron Maum, and Dr. Maum is from Cheyenne, and thank you so much for your service to the Senate today. We don't have a nurse scheduled today. On this day in history, Senators, in 1962, John Glenn made space history when he orbited the world three times in 4 hours, 55 minutes. He was the first American to orbit the Earth. He was aboard the Friendship 7, Mercury Capital. I had a quote that came to mind this morning when we were in a committee meeting, and it says that tact, or we could substitute the word diplomacy if we wanted to, tact or diplomacy is the art of making a point without making an enemy. Senator Scott.
President, I ask privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. President, as you all know, I've had kind of a rough time of it recently with passing of my wife and the funeral on Saturday and all. And I wanted to take an opportunity to thank the Senate and to thank the Senate community in the larger sense, including the staff, including a number of the lobbyists, for all the support and courtesies that you've shown me. It's made a big difference to me in my ability to deal with the situation, and I really appreciate all the help that all of you have given me.
Thank you so much, Senator Scott. Senator Burns?
Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
May I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Mr. President, part of the dress code that we have here are neckties, and for years I swore that if I ever met the inventor, I would strangle him with his own invention. Quite often they're just ornamental and sometimes commemorative of the school we went to or whatever. Sometimes, in those rare occasions, our neckwear is earned, and I would like to inform the Senate that the neckwear today of my deskmate was earned in 4 hours and 4 minutes running 26 miles, 365 yards yesterday in Arizona. And I think he deserves a hand.
Thank you. Well, Senator Case, there are days when I'd like to run that far away, but I don't think I could do it that fast. Other privileges of the floor. Seeing none, I guess we're ready for messages from the House.
February the 17th, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 106, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 8, Department of Workforce Services Consolidation, ayes 58, excused 2. February the 17th, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 108, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 14, wrongful death representative, ayes 58, excused 2. February the 17th, 2012. From the House of Representatives, message number 107, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 9, Unemployment Insurance Compliance, ayes 58, excused 2. February the 17th, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 109, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 32, Redistricting of the Legislature, substitute number 1. Ayes 49, noes 9, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees, I believe.
February the 17th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 12, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 17th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 14, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholson, Peterson, Von Flatren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 17th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 84, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Coe, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 17th, 2012, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 41, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Yes, sir, Senator Geist. You certainly may.
We have an old friend sitting over here that used to sit right over here where Senator Von Flatren used to sit, and I thought we ought to welcome him back to the Senate. Mr. Robertson.
Well, Senator Roberts, if you'd like to step to one of the mics, you can come up front or take one of the mics there. We'd be glad to hear some of your thoughts. They're of great value when you're here, and I fear they haven't lost any value. Just a second, I'll find the correct... there we go. Go ahead, sir.
I'm honored to be here, fellow senators, and I... That's great. I'm still with the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust, and we're doing a great job for you. We're working hard, and we certainly appreciate that piece of legislation, and we're all around the state of Wyoming, and people are being more acquainted with us, and we're just doing a lot of great things for wildlife, and we sure appreciate that legislature. I'm indeed grateful. I'm honored that I was a part of the Senate and being a part of you folks and all the good things you do. And, Mr. President, thanks a lot. I appreciate being able to say those words.
Well, thank you, and we all know that it's in good hands. Senate File 6, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 6, County Memorial Hospital District staggered terms.
There are no amendments. Senate File 6, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 7, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 7, Election District Revisions.
No amendments. Senate File 7, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 62, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 62, Electrical Installation Licensing Exceptions.
There are no amendments. Senate File 62, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 67, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 67, Real Estate Brokers and Sales Agents Opinions on Value.
There are no amendments. Senate File 67, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 74, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 74, Severance Tax Trona Valuation.
There are no amendments. Senate File 74, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Small number of bills on third reading today, so there is no consent list. We'll get right into the order of the bills on. Senate File 15, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 15, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, Advanced Conversion Technologies Task Force Amendment, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are no amendments. Are you ready for the question? Senate File 15 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson,
aye.
Closing vote, closing vote closed, 29 ayes, 1 no.
Senate File 15, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 15 has passed the Senate. Senate File 17, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 17, Game and Fish Authority Revision, sponsored by the Travel Committee, and Act relating to Game and Fish, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are no amendments. Are you ready for the question? Senate File 17, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll? Amrick,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross, Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott, Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 17, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 17 has passed the Senate. Senate File 19, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 19, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Predator Management, District Management, an act relating to predator control, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
No amendments. You ready for the question? Senate File 19, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall a bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard,
aye.
Bebout,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
no.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Senate File 19, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 19 has passed the Senate. Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion has passed, and I would like for Senator Cooper to please approach the desk. Senator Cooper.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 25. Will the reading clerk please read the file?
Senate File 25, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Public Records, an act relating to public records. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. No, Senator Burns, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hold on. Hold. Got to find. Just a minute. Man, something's going on. I got it. Just a minute. No, it's a line. There's a big line here. See this line here.
Thank you, Bernice.
I have to click on the chair, right? Oh, I see. That's a problem.
There we go.
Senator Perkins, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole writes a report that it do so, the favorable recommendation on Senate File 25, Public Records. For an explanation of the bill, I ask that you would call upon the good senator from over by Saratoga, Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, an explanation of the bill. You'll remember last year that there was a similar bill that was brought on behalf of trying to do more public disclosure for public records. While it passed the House, it failed here in the Senate. The committee assigned the judiciary as an interim topic to take a look at this. And one of the things through this process is there was a coalition of groups within the state of Wyoming, very broad coalition, that was asked to review the bill last year and come back and make recommendations. That coalition include local governments, state institutions, municipal governments, county governments, across the board represented by industry, within the press association, and many other individuals. As a result of that, I think they had three or four different meetings, and they came back with some compromise language. And what you're going to see is this bill basically reflects what that coalition of groups was able to agree upon, which would constitute a public record. Let me walk you through that. There's basically four provisions. One was amend and repeal some of the current definitions. The second part was amending provisions relating to the inspection of the documents. Three was an exemption from disclosure, and then also amending penalty provisions and then providing for an effective date. If you'll go to page 2 of the bill that talks the definitions, basically as there was a major rewrite in this section, and definitions to what constitutes a public record. One of the factors that was driving this is things have changed, and we now have a lot more technology than we had back when this first bill was originally drafted. So much of the language that talks about in here is to try to address the current situation, whether it be email, iPhones, or any other type of electronic media that may be out there, and whether or whether that would not constitute a public record. If you go to the second part of the definitions, there's a new definition for applications. One of the things that was brought in that wasn't in the old language is it now requires a written request constitutes an application. However, the custodian at their discretion may be able to waive that and just take a verbal request. New definition also for information, and that information has to be in a physical form. That's the important component within that provision. Now, the next thing goes on to the section on 16.4.202, page 3, line 10, which is right of inspections of rules and regulations. And basically, this just brings in language that sets the business hours that are required from an entity requesting those public records at what time that they have to be there to request those through the normal business hours of the political subdivision. If you turn the page, it has more language about the custodian as authorized person, when those public records will be available, and then how you obtain those public records. The next section, if we go to, is section on page 5, is 16.4.203, is the right of inspections, ground of denial, and access of news media. Basically, what this brings in is a whole provision on what a public record, what that custodian has, what they is basically exempted. This is an exemption clause from the public records section, and it primarily deals with agricultural exemptions, that if you would go and request some information relating to private lands or information off private lands, now the custodian that record, as long as it doesn't violate any other existing state laws or statutes, could deny access to that record. The other part of this is if you go to the new section under section 16.4.205 under penalty on page, just brings in a new penalty clause and what constitutes intentionally knowing a violation of the law. With that, I would stand for any questions.
Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I read this, and the question I have, it gets to, I think, probably page 2, and we talk about the electronic communication. And what I'm trying to understand is, if we communicate electronically with members of the, say, a county commissioners or members of the Oil and Gas Commission or the State Land Board or anything, on a personal note, is that something that now becomes public record? Or do we, in fact, have to go through the state email route? How do you differentiate? How do you get involved when we send these electronic emails that, in fact, you differentiate between the two? So if I wanted to send something to a member of the Oil and Gas Commission, but it may not deal directly with that, but I send it to his email site, does that mean now it becomes a public record? And so it's available and can be utilized in any shape or form, and that's a private conversation between the two of us? Or do I then have to, every time I talk to somebody that has anything to do with state government, I have to have a different email site and talk to them separately to do that and be able to communicate?
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, one thing, if you were operating under your legislative email account, legislature has immunity from this particular provision, but if you were doing it as a private individual, my understanding of the law now is, yes, that would become part of a public record if it was conveyed through an email. I would suggest that there is a proposed amendment that may clarify some of this issue. But the way I read this right now is if you did it as a private individual and conveyed that information through an email, it would become a public record.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the second question I was going to ask, and you just referred to that, the legislature does have immunity. So if as a legislator, I send an email to a county commissioner, the law says that it has to be a public record. It's on their side, but on my side it doesn't. What happens?
Senator Hicks.
I would defer that question to the Attorney General, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm certainly not the Attorney General, thank goodness. But I think just to clarify, if you go to page 2, lines 11 through about 14 there, we're talking about any information created, accepted, or obtained by the state or any agency, institution, or political subdivision of the state. Then I think this is a qualifier in furtherance of its official function and transaction of public business. So I think if you get back to the example where you send it to the Oil and Gas Commission from you, well, that's information that is accepted by that Oil and Gas Commission. So it certainly qualifies under that standard. So then the question then becomes, is that message wishing him happy birthday or asking how his daughter is doing in school or where he's going, where his favorite fishing hole is? Those things are not in furtherance of its official function and transaction public business. But if it's related to a specific issue or policy or consideration by the Oil and Gas Commission, then it certainly is in furtherance of its official function and in the transaction public business. So the answer is, if it's accepted by him in the furtherance of his capacity as an oil member of the Oil and Gas Commission, and it's as a part and it deals with furtherance of the purpose or what the Oil and Gas Commission is involved with, then under this, as it's written right now, it would be a public record.
Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So who makes that decision? Does the person receiving the email make a decision and put a file that says this is personal, this is public information that should be disclosed? And if he does, who in fact reviews that and who determines later on whether he did the right thing or not?
Senator Perkins.
The same folks that do it now in the same way that it happens now. If you get a public information request and it's requesting all the emails associated with that came from Eli Bebout to it would be a public record. I mean, right
but
now
we should refrain from using names on the floor.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Thank you for that admonition, Mr. Chairman. So if it's but ultimately, that's right now. That's the same process that you go through right now. Classic example, you know, you get an example of a public record. This is it's a request. It's what's responsive to a request from someone for information. Even without this bill now, it may very well be a member a public record. If you get a request from an outside party asking for all your emails for all the emails that had to do with a specific issue, and the email for which the good senator from Fremont County intimated that falls within an issue, somebody has to review that and determine that it is. And typically how that happens is there's an email that goes out, says, okay, somebody's asked for this request. We've got to find this stuff. And if it's there, you're supposed to turn it over. And then somebody will review it to see if it, you know, typically you're going to find the in this case, Oil and Gas Commission's counsel, or somebody's going to review that to see if it's responsive to the request. That happens now. So the question you have now is, does this, you know, is this clear to clarify it or help it? It I think it does clarify or help with the fact that we're talking about electronic information now. But certainly we have found, and it's been consistent, that electronic information is considered written, if you will. And so right now those emails and those types of things are subject to public requests now. This clarifies that issue. But I think that's the best that I can do to answer your question right now.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along the same lines, what's in this legislation or any place else in statute that just doesn't say everybody goes out and gets one of these free email addresses out there, not to mention any names of all those people in the cloud. But you get a separate one over here. You're on your government issue computer. You've got your separate private email. You do all that business over here. By having a separate private email that either the employee pays for or is free, is that included in that? That's my first question. The second question is, and this happened to our college in Casper, is that they had a request that overwhelmed them. And this was a request from out of state by a law firm that was dealing with a lawsuit that really didn't involve Wyoming, but we had used the product that was in the lawsuit. And it cost the college several thousand dollars to gather all these emails, all this data together, and then have it purged by legal counsel and then put it back out to the requesting parties. And they and the college had to take that $4,000 out of their budget, and they weren't able to charge it back to the requester. So I guess my question around that one would be, what would stop a phishing trip into the files of somebody, either by a legal firm or the media just wanting to go in there and see whatever they can find and whatever they can make up and write after that? So can you address those?
Senator Perkins.
And I think that's a very good point. You illustrate exactly that's happening now. I don't know that this bill makes that worse or better. And typically what you do is you make this stuff available for public inspection. And so ultimately there's no requirement that you simply do this for gratis. What this bill does that is helpful in that regard, because right now that's an obligation that a person has right now. Obviously if they didn't, the example that you gave, they wouldn't have had to spend that money if that wasn't already an obligation. What this does is this provides some time frames. This provides the ability to say, okay, we'll have it. It provides the ability to say that it can't, in gathering those records, it has to be done in a manner which doesn't interfere with the custodian of those records, other duties. It has to be, so they can't come in and just say it's got to happen now. It happens under that schedule. It's also, I believe also that you're able to recover, not under this bill, but I think now you're able to recover reasonable costs of complying with those types of requests. But what this bill does is it doesn't change that and doesn't make that go away. But what it does is it clarifies what public records are. It also clarifies the time frames that the custodian of the record has to respond. In this case, the custodian has to respond within 7 days to say either if the record's available or if it's not available, when it will be available, and the reasons it'll, you know, what that. So it doesn't have to respond in 7 days, but you have to give a response of whether you'll produce those records in 7 days and the problems with that. In that, we would anticipate that at the same time, the custodian can also tell them the approximate cost or what the fees will be for that type of recovery, but records recovery. But it does help in the regard that it provides some time frames and doesn't removes this ability that the custodian has to drop everything right now and go do it. So it's helpful in that regard.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was a no vote on this in the committee because I think it raises a number of the questions that are being asked on this floor and I think will be asked on this floor. But I do have another question about this. This applies to any state or state agency or institution or political subdivision of the state. So we're talking about any fire department, hospital board, irrigation district, sewer district, except when you get to page 6. And then starting on line 7, there's an agricultural exemption. And so I guess my question is for the proponents of this bill is, does that therefore exempt, and it says for information concerning an agricultural operation, farming, conservation practice, or the land itself, if the information was provided by an agricultural producer, owner of agricultural land, in order to participate in a program of the state or any agency. So does this exempt irrigation districts, for instance, or does it exempt just the information coming from ranches and farms to the irrigation district? And how do you decide? So are irrigation districts now exempt and water and sewer districts not? And I was wondering if the proponents of the bill could clarify that for me.
Senator Hicks.
I did the seed.
Mr. Cooper, yeah.
As I find you here.
Help.
Go ahead, Senator, Mr. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to address the concerns, with this, let me give you the genesis for this, because I think it's important that you know where the agricultural exemption comes from. The rationale from this is, right now, if you participate in any federal farm bill programs in the United States, this language was taken right out of the federal statutes and the provisions to do that. And the reason is because now we're moving into kind of a private property rights issue. And the reason that the feds basically exempt this because there's going to be certain information that may be collected that it's not in the best interest of that landowner or those public lands to reside in the public domain in the interest of private property rights. So that's the genesis of this. This language was taken right out of the federal statutes. The current situation in Wyoming, it was much more permissive, our state rules and regulations and law, than what the federal government said was appropriate to protect these private property rights. But to address the good senator's questions from Sheridan County, the way I read this, it says an agricultural operation, and that's pretty clear. An irrigation district is a district which is a subdivision outlined underneath the state of Wyoming statutes. So I would say no, an irrigation district doesn't fall under the component of an agricultural operation.
Senator Bebot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe the committee could share a little more information, too, as and being one that's very supportive of ag exemptions, and if our good colleague from Teton County was here, I'm sure he'd jump all over supporting this. But but the question is, there are other situations that exist out there that have confidential information, businesses, other things. I can think of a whole litany of them. Why did you only do one, and did you have discussions about the other potential conflicts? It is just very similar to this in dealing with the federal bureaucracy and federal agencies. You could get into, the list is long, that you could get into where you have similar situations exist, but yet you don't deal with them.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. And let's go back, and if you go to page 2, let's look what we're swapping out, because my fellow Senate members, whether you pass this or not, you're not getting away from public disclosure. If you go back and look at the crossed-out language on page 2, you'll see what it is now. It says, public records, when not otherwise specified, includes the original copies of any paper, correspondence, form, book, photograph, photostat, film, microfilm, sound recording, map, drawing, or other document, regardless of physical form or characteristics, that have been made by the state of Wyoming, any counties, municipalities, political subdivisions thereof, and by any agencies of the state, counties, municipalities, and political subdivisions thereof, or receive them in connection with any transaction of public business. So you see, all of those things are in there. So whether you pass this bill or not, municipalities, counties, special districts, fire districts, all those folks still have to produce records, whether you pass this bill or not. So what this does, if you go and look what it is, we go back and we try and expand that and update the information so it applies to the 21st century. But going specifically to the question by the good senator from Fremont County, if you go down, we left in the language on, if you go to lines 22 and 23 of page 2, you see privileged or confidential by law. Whether it's ag or whether it's, if you go into, Wyoming has a, what's called the Wyoming Trade Secrets Act, and it talks about confidential information for businesses, and so if you've got processes, customer lists, other things like that, which have value in and of themselves because of their nature in a business, those are protected. They're protected by statute under the Wyoming Trade Secrets Act. And so if it's privileged or confidential by law, it applies to those situations. So if there is a privilege or a confidentiality associated with that, you have the right to assert that, and that doesn't go away with this statute or not. What you're talking about here is mostly, as you're clarifying this about when you look at public records, if you go to page 3, lines 5 through 8, and this is where does a couple things. If you go to line 1, application, we're defining what an application means for this. So an application means a written request. However, custodian may at discretion deem a verbal request to be an application. So what we're doing before, there was no requirement there that it be in writing. Now we have a requirement that it be in writing. However, the last sentence there is if you're at the county clerk's office and they say, can I see, and the county clerk can hand it to you, you can deem that a request, and so it just allowed for that. But other than that, it has to be in writing before. It didn't have to be in writing. If you go over to information, we're just trying to include that so that definition now broad enough to include those things
so that we're not playing button, who's got the button. If somebody has the right to the information under the existing statute, they have it. So what kinds of, what does information mean? Well, information means opinions, facts, or data of any kind. In whatever form, physical form kept, or maintained, or including but not limited to written, oral, which means a recording, visual, electronic, or other physical form. So whatever form you're maintaining information in, so you have emails now, texts on business phones and things like that. If it's received, if you have a phone that's issued to you by your, if you're a on a board member of a of an entity and they've issued you a cell phone and you get a text on that, it's a public record. Now it's a public record whether you have this bill or not, but it's a public record. So what this bill is a modernization, and we can kick against the pricks, so to speak, on what it means and whether or not we like public disclosure. But whether you pass this bill or not, ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to be relieved from your obligation to provide public records to those people when they ask.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, just if I could just remind the body of the people who are involved in it. We had the County Commissioners Association, the towns, the media, legislators. There was a large group of people that came together on this, and it wasn't the perfect bill for any one of them, but overall, people recognized and appreciated that their voices were heard, and not just heard, but they were actually able to get their priorities into there. And the group really gave overwhelming support for it at the end of the day. And so a perfect, probably not, depending on where you're coming from, but overall a good product that all the interested parties recognize that their both needs and protections were recognized. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Two questions. One, relatively simple. I think on page 3, lines 14 through 15, it speaks of availability during normal business hours. I have a strong suspicion that some of the smaller political subdivisions, and particularly some of the irrigation districts and maybe soil conservation districts, may not have normal business hours. And just how do you deal with those? You know, we always think of the larger agencies which do, but I think you may have some smaller ones which don't. So I just raise that as a question. Second, and I think more importantly, looking at page 2, as I read that, I deal a lot with workers' comp cases. Chair of Labor Committee, I'll get inquiries about workers' comp cases from all over the state. And that often involves some very personal information which people share with me. Now, I understand this doesn't reach to legislative communications. I'm all right on that score. But when they deal directly with the state agency, you've got some very personal medical information involved. And as I read this, that would become a public record unless it is, which is not privileged or confidential by law. Can I be assured that there is a specific statute somewhere that makes that information confidential or privileged? Because if there isn't, if it isn't covered by that exemption, then this bill ought not to pass. People's, particularly in the workers' comp area, you deal with some very personal information. And they have to communicate that back and forth with the state agency, and I would hope it was already privileged or confidential, but I'm not familiar with all those statutes well enough to know that. So that's my question.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I think that in answering those in reverse order, I believe HIPAA, I think medical information is protected health information, which is covered under HIPAA. So it's there. However, in the workers' compensation environment, you have another issue that happens is when they sign their claim form, they waive their rights to confidentiality. I mean, they, So when, if you file a workers' compensation claim, you are believed, unless they've changed it, it used to be on the application, that you're waiving your right to confidentiality when you do that. But that being said, I know that I don't do workers' comp anymore. When I used to, there was, people are sensitive to that, and I think that there are, and there are stuff that goes out there that ultimately it is protected by HIPAA. So the general answer to your question is it's protected, but I mean, if people sign things that release that information, they sign things that release that information. Back to your first question, when you go, it says during business hours. It also says in existing language in the statute, this is on page 3, it says the official custodian of any public records may make rules and regulations with reference to the inspection of the records as reasonably necessary for protection of the records and the prevention of unnecessary interference with the other regular discharge of the duties of the custodian or his office. So I think what happens is all it takes is your body does a resolution, says, yeah, we'll call those folks and we'll make arrangements for them to meet it and give it to them. So you've got that flexibility in there to do that.
Senator Barr.
As I find you. Questions about this. As I understand this, if I conduct some official business on my computer, that becomes public knowledge. What happens when I change out my computer? It becomes old and outdated. Do I need to take and download every bit of information and emails that I've had onto my new computer? What happens if my computer gets stolen? Am I then liable for this information because I can't provide it? I think this is an impossible task sometimes we're asked to do here, and I really question this legislation.
Hold on. It's a fairly complicated issue, Senator Burns, so if you'd wait there, maybe give a response from Senator Perkins, would you? Is it okay? Oh, sorry. Senator Burns, would you like to answer that question?
Mr. Chairman.
The good senator has asked a question, and this is something that I think that this body should bear in mind. We exempt ourselves from public records law, so the good senator doesn't have to worry about his computer or his communications. This is something we're imposing on 400 other agencies of the state, the vast majority of which are filled with volunteers who can now, as a result of this law, end up getting prosecuted.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Thanks for answering that question, good Senator from Sheridan. I think that's, that's exactly right. I mean, when you look at that, it's... How hypocritical is it of the legislature to impose these rules on others that they don't have? But my response to that is that bill's not before us. Our exemption from this, our legislative confidentiality provisions aren't a matter of this bill. So I can't talk. I can't bring that before you and here. What I can tell you is whether you pass this bill or not, those 400 other agencies are subject to public disclosure. This does not change that. This is not going to make this go away. If you fail this bill, it doesn't go away. The only thing you're going to have is you're going to continue to go in there and they're going to continue to go to courts and they're going to continue to argue and they're going to continue to pay lawyers to argue about what is a public record, what is information. Do your officially issued cell phones, the texts on those, are they a matter of public record? What about the emails? Are they a matter of public record? Right now, all you do is you're going to go through this, and you're going to fight about it, and you're going to have litigation about it, and they're going to spend a bunch of money and time trying to fight about it and figure out what's a public record. So, I mean, you can vote this up or you can vote it down, but the obligation is not going to change. So, you can do that. I mean, it's up to you. You can cast away that work, but by doing that, the only thing you're doing is you're leaving people out there with less regimen, less explanation, less fulfillment of what it means and how do you comply. So, and going back to the good senator from Evanston's specific questions, that's why I always buy my personal computers when I get done with them at the legislature, because I don't, even if you've erased them, there's ways to get that information back. So the best thing you can do is probably acid and sledgehammer after you buy it or something like that.
Senator Hicks, I assume you're going to answer this question too.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, just to get back and kind of reiterate, this is about public records, and What was driving this issue is the old law is antiquated. What this basically does is it sets parameters, and it provides more protection for those 400 entities out there. Because before, if somebody walked in and says, I want a copy of your public records, and you handed them to them, they didn't like them, they could run right down to the district court and file a lawsuit. Now it specifies a time frame to address the good senator from Natrona County's concern. It also says within that 7 days you can say, I can't give it to you in 7 days. You're going to have to wait because it's a voluminous record. So it provides some protections for those local entities in that component. The written thing is new. Before, you could just go in there and make a statement, and then you could end up in front of the district court judge trying to decide what that statement was. So what we've tried to do is tighten this up as much as possible that was acceptable to all parties. This affords more protection for those 400 local government entities out there under the Public Records Act and currently exist today. So vote it up, vote it down, we'll be back to the right same place. But what this is trying to do is afford more protections.
I'm trying to get Senator Dockstetter in here. Senator Dockstetter, would you please?
Okay. Obviously, I have to declare something here. I'm associated with the press, but I don't think that precludes me from speaking on it or voting on it. I commend the committee. Committee number one worked very hard on this in the interim. It took up a lot of time. They heard from a lot of people, and they worked it through. Now, it makes the changes necessary. It takes care of the new technology, takes care of the custodian, and the emphasis is on the official function, the official transaction, and the furtherance of public business. The public's business is the public business, members of the body. An approach to open government is what makes this state and this country great, standing for the bill.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm still a little bit hung up on the end of the bill, beginning on page 6, which provides a special exception for the agricultural community. And I certainly did hear the answer the first time, but my problem, Mr. Chairman, is on page 2 at the bottom. It specifically says, which is not privileged or confidential by law, which is supposed to cover everything else that is privileged or confidential except for the agricultural community. But we need a special provision for the agricultural community, which begs the question, if there is information within the agricultural community that is not privileged or confidential by law, why would we grant an exception under this law? And if that's not the case, why do we need the exception? I don't know why we're granting special privilege when, if there is an instance where we need special privilege in one case, I would expect there to be a lot of additional instances where we would need it, as was suggested by my colleague from Fremont County. So I'd like further explanation there for why we need two additional pages on the agricultural exemption.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to explain this a little further, I'm going to illustrate a couple examples, and I think hopefully those analogies will bring to light why this is important. Over 50% of the state resides in private ownership, and is absolutely fundamental for good government and protection of the people within the state of Wyoming that sometimes the states are going to be in a position where they need that information off of private lands. And I'll give you an example. As recently, the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality was in a process of collecting water quality data around the state of Wyoming that basically would have been able to preclude some of the EPA's far-reaching jurisdictional reach based on the tributary rule. The trouble is to effectively be able to validate this model based on water quality standards, the department had to access a certain number of random sites that include private property. The trouble is for the state's best interest to be able to move back and preclude these overreaching constraints by the EPA, they had access to private property. But to get to the private property, that information now becomes part of the public disclosure. Now, let's play an example that you may have an impairment on your stream. Could be fecal coliform. Under our standards, we don't identify the difference between ducks, cows, geese, elk, moose, muskrats, or any other mammal or warm-bodied species is what the contributing factor. But what it does show is in the public domain that you have now violated the water quality standards of the United States of America. So the consequences of that is anybody has access to this information. We live in a world of very litigious organizations that try to use these regulations to preclude commerce within the United States and within the state of Wyoming. You've now put this landowner in a position to assist the state of Wyoming to be able to participate in a program to back down federal regulatory environment. You've now jeopardized them from a regulatory takings under the Clean Water Act. I can give you another example. We're all dealing with sage grouse right now. Why would any landowner in the world want to let anybody from the state of Wyoming on to come and assess the condition of habitat? What happens if you have a 20,000-acre ranch and you come back and you've let the Department of Game and Fish on or any other entity to determine that that's suitable habitat for sage grouse? And let's assume that the worst-case scenario happens and those sage grouse are listed. What you've now done to that landowner is said, well, we want you to participate in a program to be able to demonstrate that we have all this suitable and occupied habitat out there. We put that information into the public domain. The species goes onto the endangered species list, and then the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service comes back and says, oh, by the way, Mr. Private Landowner, we're going to preclude grazing and oil and gas development because this is now residing in the public domain that we know that you, on your particular piece of private property, have suitable habitat and X number of grouse. And this is fundamental to the principles of this country that we protect private property rights, and that's the only thing this does. So when somebody comes in there and they want to sue the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service because they didn't exclude grazing or oil and gas or surface mining and suitable sage grouse habitat, that information is not open to the public domain, to the litigants that we now deal with in this environment. So those are the real-world ramifications of not putting this agricultural exemption in there. And the exemption is to protect private property rights. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jennings, we're going to get you in there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go back to a question I didn't think I got answered. Was what if the public official has a private email account and he's doing emails back and forth on that, even though he does take it up maybe an issued computer? I heard about the cell phone, but what if he uses his own cell phone that he pays for and he's getting text messages or even emails, because we can get emails on cell phones now too. If he's using that, how does that apply? Because that's his private property, his email address, but he may be doing some business of the state on it. And then on the exemption part, I mean, I understand the explanation for ag, but there's got to be a whole other list of exemptions out there. Our coroner in Natrona County had a battle going with the media because they came in and wanted the drug analysis on a young man that was killed in a car wreck. He was dead. But yet the media wanted to produce an article that listed the fact that this guy had drugs in his system, and the only people that were there, left there, that were infected by that were the parents and the family. That wasn't information that did anybody any good whatsoever in the community. So where do we draw the line on the exemptions? I mean, we have one for ag now. Do we put one up for the coroner? Do next year and sessions after that, we start to chip away with an exemption for this special group and an exemption for that special group? Where does this all stop? Or where has it started? What's going to lead us to? Because we're there. We're putting stuff out there and letting people look at it and make their own judgments on it. When it's just a piece here and a piece there, because we're living in a soundbite society now, and now we're going to open up more and more of these records for people to pick up and go with. But I'd like my cell phone and email address answered first, please.
Senator Perkins, you want to do a soundbite on this?
Sure. You know, I don't do soundbites well because I talk too much, so they can never get. You always wonder which 5 seconds they're going to pick. I think the answer to that question is if that is information on your private cell phone or your private email account that was created, accepted, or obtained in the furtherance of your official function in the transaction of your public business, then it's a public record. It is without this bill or not. And I think that's the point that we're trying to make, is ultimately, is that a recording? Is that a document that's in a physical form? If it's electronic, pretty much the courts are now saying that's physical form if it's held in electronic. So with or without this bill, that doesn't solve the problem. If your intent is that emails on private accounts be private, then the best thing, the only protection I can give to you is, one, make sure you delete your records on a regular basis on your private stuff, or two, forward it to your private account, because if you're transacting public business in a public capacity, anything you do other than maybe if you and I talk on the telephone, because and there's no recording of that, anything else that's in any form of that's stored in written documentation or not is going to be a public record with or without this bill. It's not going to make any difference. You're not going to be, when you pass this bill, if this bill passes, you're not doing away with the fact that you don't have to produce those, because if they're found out about, if they're not produced or someone finds out about, they can make you produce those now. What this bill does do is it clarifies, so everybody knows, one, what rules you're working from and what exactly it is, and the answer is everything. If it's stored in any physical form, electrons or otherwise, the other thing it does is it creates some reasonable response times for custodians of those records to reply. It provides a procedure if someone believes that those records are not readily available or they're not subject to this. It provides the ability to go to court and have a judicial review to see if they would be included in it or not. That didn't exist before. And it also provides, this exemption for the ag exemption. Is there other exemptions that you want to have? Probably so. Maybe so. The legislature has an exemption. Ag may have an exemption. I can tell you that patents and other trade secrets have exemptions. If you go into the Wyoming Trade Secrets Act, there's lots of exemptions there. If you have attorney-client privileges are exempt. You have deliberative exemptions in some places in the statute. See, there's lots of exemptions out there that are already in there. And if they're not covered and we find that there are exemptions that are worthwhile, yeah, we'll have to bring a bill and create the list. But even if you don't pass this bill, you're still going to need to create those exemptions because they're still public records now.
Senator Scott.
I have a concern about the ag exemption from the other side. And take the specific case of sage grouse, which is a real risk for us here. Because you've got some of the extremist organizations that are trying to get the sage grouse listed so they can then control our land uses and tell us what to do. We've got sage grouse on our place in quite some numbers. We count them regularly, and the Game and Fish has a program in our area where we get the lecs counted, and that information goes into their database. And some of them, I've done it myself, so I can produce the record independent of the Game and Fish, but I may want to get out the Game and Fish records if I ever get into a legal fight with the BLM over grazing on that land. The lecs are on private ground, it so happens. And the ones that the Game and Fish and other volunteers counted, I may be able to want to get at those Game and Fish records to, in part, to prove that the grazing, Mr. Chairman, is beneficial to the sage grouse, which it is. And back the extremists off from some of their attempts to use these things to regulate what we're doing. With this ag exemption, are we then precluding the ability to get at that information for that kind of reason? So that's a concern I have about that. And it's the other side of, let's keep everything confidential. As a landowner, I may need that information to protect myself against the feds and against the extremists. The second thing is hearing the discussion and hearing the response to the question on workers' comp. I think that between now and third reading, I ought to put an exemption in this bill for workers' comp individual case information, because it's not just health information covered by HIPAA. It's there's particularly where they're rallying over the cause of an accident, or was it a work-related or a non-work-related accident, it may go beyond what HIPAA protects. And I think that there may be some of the individuals out there may need some privacy protection here that we're starting to invade. I think it would be better to try to put an exemption of that kind in here if there's uncertainty, and it sounds to me like there is, rather than just say, well, the bill isn't ready. Because I think that by putting some parameters on this, the bill is a necessary step, a useful step. But I want to serve notice, Mr. Chairman, and the sponsors, that I'm interested in working on such an amendment unless I get further evidence that there's adequate protection already.
Senator Hicks, were you going to respond to that question? Senator Rothfuss, would you, unless you have something related to... Okay. Okay. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of comments along those lines. If you go back to the bill under page 6 to address the good senator from Natrona's first discussion, it says, this information concerning an agricultural operation, farming, or conservation practice on the land itself, if, and here's the operative point that I hope answers the good senator's question, if the information was provided by an agriculture producer or owner of agricultural land in order to participate in a program. Now, that being said, that outlines what information is covered. So you'd have to provide this information. And by provide, that may be as simple as just agreeing to allow access to collect data on your private property. In that particular case, I think that still, as you're providing that information, that basically information resides with the public landowner and the agency or political subdivision collecting that. So the second part of the good senator's question would be a response to say, yes, we should probably look at this as a second reading amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, looking at this a bit further with the agricultural exemption, I'd just like to clarify that I wasn't intending to imply to my good colleague from the mother county that the exemption was not in some way legitimate. I think he made two very compelling cases for where there would be justification for an exemption. What I was trying to illustrate in that instance was that there are more cases that would be potentially viable for an exemption, and I see a problem with creating one particular exemption without having the capacity to explore all of those exemptions. But one of the things that came out of that discussion, Mr. Chairman, is I'm hearing from my colleague from Natrona County that basically all of this stuff is already in place, and we're sort of changing a couple of the parameters on how it gets done. But then I'm seeing the necessity for an exemption to occur. So what I'm missing here is there enough being changed on what is actually covered by these open records laws that we need to explore new exemptions, which is sort of one extreme of the argument, or are we changing so little that we don't need to explore new exemptions? And if so, why are we starting to explore new exemptions? I almost see them as kind of either we need this to be an independent bill or there is more to the changes than what we've identified so far. And if that's the case, what are those changes, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess what I can tell you is the exemption that was included in the committee's work was the exemption that was brought before it. There wasn't anybody else that brought any requests for any other exemptions, with the exception that and this goes to an amendment that's in your folders. Probably the biggest exemption that people looked at was what about, and it goes back to my good compatriot from Natrona County and also the good senator from Fremont County was talking about with these personal emails, whether or not sent to, and this issue, whether or not if it's sent to one individual who's on a governing board or a commission, if it's sent to just one of those individuals by somebody outside, should that be a matter of public record? And ultimately, it came down on the side. What the committee did was there was, after several bloody committee meetings and several meetings by individuals outside of the committee who were the associations that were kind of on opposite sides of this issue, hammered out this compromise. And ultimately, with a few exceptions, the committee tried to honor that compromise because it was a tough compromise, and both sides had to give up what they perceived certain advantages that were particular to them. And so that's, I mean, we did the job that we were assigned by the management committee. We heard the exemptions that were requested that came before it, and if somebody didn't bring us an exemption or ask us to exempt something else, then we didn't go looking for exemptions.
Any further discussion on the bill? We have a couple of committee of the whole amendments we have to deal with. Senator Burns.
Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25 and ask that further reading of the amendment be waived.
Proceed.
Yeah, did ask to be read in.
Oh, excuse me. Thank you. Would you read those in, sir?
Senate File 25, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 11.
Proceed, Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I brought two Committee of the Whole amendments simply because the first one is non-controversial. The first portion of it on line 2 and 3 of the amendment goes to page 2, line 11 of the bill, where it states any information, and I add the words in physical form. That is so there can be no confusion further on about whether when somebody might have said something to somebody else cannot become part of the public record. It has to be in a physical form, written, recorded, or otherwise. The other portion of the amendment came, at the request of staff, and it has to do with the term which is not privileged or confidential by law, and that instead of being on page 22, I'm sorry, on page 2, line 22 and 23, it should be up on line 14, where it's actually dealing with the information itself rather than the meeting. And so I would ask the floor to vote aye on this amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25, please say aye.
Aye.
The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Whoops. Oh, all those opposed. Thank you. Sorry. Got a little carried away here. Okay. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25 has passed. We now have another Committee of the Whole Amendment. Senator, we need to have that read in.
Senate File 25, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 10.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 25 and ask that further reading of the amendment be waived. Mr. Chairman, this is actually the amendment that the good chairman of the Judiciary Committee spoke of just a few moments ago. Mr. Chairman, he was absolutely right. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee was right earlier in his statements when he said a lot of this bill deals with how you define public record, what a public record is, and that's what this amendment goes to. There's basically two parts to this amendment. The first one deals with page 2, line 13, and is a public record the communication between somebody, let's say a private citizen, and a majority of the governing body, in this case, let's say, for instance, a city council. Is that a public record, or is any communication between that private citizen and any member of that city council a public record? I'm of the opinion that they have to be dealing with the majority or the quorum of that public body for it to become a public record. One of the concerns I have with this bill is the fact that a lot of people, a lot of common citizens out there, will communicate and fairly confidential information with their elected official, who they trust, not realizing that that could become part of the public record. It was never their intent, and they never had any inkling that this might end up on the public record. If they're sending it in, let's say, a written form to everybody on the city council or public board, then they should have a full expectation that it would be public record. That's what the first portion of this amendment does. It says you have to send it to the quorum, to the majority.
not just communication with one particular person. The second part of the amendment goes to page 5 after line 14, and it has to do with, again, what is part of the public record, and what we add is what is not part of the public record are records of pre-decisional or deliberative communications of the agency officials or employees, which are integral parts of the decision-making process, including suggestions, advisory opinions, recommendations, projections, proposals, or deliberations. In other words, if I'm going to go to, if let's say I'm a member of, let's say I'm a county commissioner, I want some expertise on a property tax or an issue I'm dealing with, I'm going to go to somebody who is an expert, let's say the good senator from Fremont County who's an expert in the field of energy. I want to get information. He may give me, actually share with me what is relatively proprietary information so that I can have make a much more informed opinion as a county commissioner. Should that become part of the public record? I think it should not be. That's why I'm bringing this amendment, because otherwise, how am I going to go out and get that candid information from those people who can give me the best information if they're afraid that that information is going to become public record? I think we had a similar instance of this on the federal level a few years ago with Vice President Cheney when he had his energy council. He was getting candid information from the members of the energy industry, and that actually went to the Supreme Court. And they said, yes, they can give him candid information. It did not have to be public record. I am just trying to extend that same principle to members of 400 governmental bodies within the state of Wyoming. Now, Mr. Chairman, this particular amendment is the amendment that during interim that the Judiciary Committee accepted and passed. The next day, it was brought up for reconsideration and brought down and voted down. I voted for it. I thought it was a good amendment. I still think it's a good amendment. That's one of the reasons why I brought it, because I think that the Senate as a whole should have a say on whether this should be part of the defined public record or not.
Senator Dockstader.
Chairman, not knowing the scenario that it was brought forth and then brought back, my concern is that it locks the process back up. There was probably a reason that that it was first addressed. As I look at it, in trying to get it to tie it in with this piece of legislation, it appears that it takes back the opportunity, it opposes the opportunity to have what's public is public. I would stand opposed to it. This complicates it further. There was a reason that they found the compromise with it, so I'd stand opposed to the amendment.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a good amendment, because we do this with ourselves. This is one of the big things that we've exempted for us. When we're working on a bill, that bill, you get the paper from LSO, says, do you want to share it with anybody, or do you want to keep it just between our staff, which we have the privilege between us and our staff? What you're doing here without this amendment is you're allowing the media and the press to be involved in the development of a bill. And how many bills, especially our veterans in here, how many bills have you worked on when you started with one idea and then you started to collect some information and you got to the point and you're like, well, it's different. It's completely different. Without this amendment, what you're doing is you're allowing the press to come in, grab those bits and pieces of information, and then write articles in, well, I know one guy that put up a gun bill and got called an idiot in the press after the bill was already formed. Just think what would happen if all that information on putting that bill together was available in the thought process that you have, that we have with our staff to get to that point. Without this amendment, we're telling all those other entities out there, you can't have that same thought process absent the influence and the pressure from the media to tell you how it should be. I think without this amendment, this is a terrible bill. I might be able to stomach this bill with this amendment.
Senator Christensen.
just a different way of looking at this, and I appreciate the concerns, and they're legitimate concerns that have been raised. But if I use an example of a county commission looking at public policy or land planning, issues about zoning, and they have gone out and contracted and worked with some experts and provided some studies and come together with numbers and information, those are important documents, and that is important information for the public to have access to, so that when they come to those final meetings, they have the same information in front of them, and they're able to make appropriate comments and input based on what's being considered, as opposed to their work in yesterday's newspaper. It does raise some concerns, but having been part of the process for quite a while on that level, these opportunities, this bit of information is critical for the community, not just for the electeds, because this process does involve our community. You know, we focus a lot of our language on the press, but when I look at involved citizens, they need access to some of this too, and so I'll be supporting it. I'll be opposing the amendment.
Senator Dockstetter.
My second time, thank you. Also opposing the amendment. Allow the public to follow the process. They'll better understand that decision if they're allowed to follow the process, and they'll better understand why their elected officials are making the decision they're making.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, let's discuss what the feds do with pre-decisional information. Haven't had the opportunity to work on a forest land use plan and a BLM RMP and three or four different oil and gas environmental impact statements as a cooperating agency. I can tell you that when you go in there and you review every single draft under the National Environmental Policy Act as a cooperating agency, all that's pre-decisional information, and it's exempted from the public record. And the reason is so you can have an open, candid conversation about a range of alternatives, the affected environment, the proposed action. So I would say in the context of pre-decisional, if it's good enough for the feds to protect that information and those discussions that take place, it ought to be good enough for the state of Wyoming.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I was listening to my colleague from Natrona County speaking, and I was reminded to coin a phrase that one of our current GOP nominators, once said corporations are people, too, and I just thought, well, press are people too. But anyway, I understand it's a matter of opinion. But just to share with the body that this is the exact debate that we had in committee. I mean, this back and forth is the exact bait and the exact thing we struggled with committee. With respect to the being in and being out, the committee had it in there, and then as we talked, ultimately, what we decided we would do is we would bring forth, knowing that this would be the debate and that this would come up again, that we decided to go back and put it back to the compromise that was forged by the folks that had come to us, recognizing when it came to the floor that there would be these floor debates and these battles. And so this is the very debate that we had in committee. And so however you stand on the bill, I just wanted to share with you the fact that, you're replying the same ground that we did, and We'll see if you come up to it with a different decision than the committee did.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not questioning the good intention of anybody here, whether the members of the press or anybody else. I'm crediting everybody here with good intentions. That's the easy part. The hard part comes years down the road when somebody, not us, suddenly finds himself confronted with the consequences of this bill. And without this amendment in there, I'm afraid that we've put too much exposure out there for a number of our fellow elected officials, whether it be down on the irrigation district level up to county commissioners or state agencies. Let's not forget them either. We can always expand the definition of public record in future sessions, even in this session, even with this bill further on. But with this amendment, I think we're taking a few baby steps, which I think we should take. and I'll leave us with this thought on about this amendment. I think I'll credit with good intentions everybody when they passed the NEPA in the first place, the EPA in the first place. Would anybody today vote for that exact same legislation now, knowing the experience we've had with it for the last 40 years? That's why I'm trying to go on the side of caution with this amendment.
You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate Fall 25, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
This amendment has passed. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 25 has passed. Are you ready for the question on the bill? Okay. All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of Senate File 25, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
This motion has passed. Division. All those who are in favor of Senate File 25, please rise. Stand. All those opposed, please stand. Okay. Senate File 25 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration. Whoops. Sorry. Yes, Senator Johnson, where are you at?
Privilege of the floor.
You may, sir.
Thank you very much. Today joining us is Dr. William Intrilligator, stand up, music director and conductor of the Cheyenne Symphony Orchestra. This season is Dr. Intrilligator's fourth with the Cheyenne Symphony, and I can attest under his leadership the orchestra is playing at ever higher levels of artistic excellence, and the organization has experienced increased attendance and higher visibility within the community. Accompanying him is Kim Lovett, who many of you know from her previous life, but now she's the executive director of the Cheyenne Symphony Orchestra. The reason they're here is they invite you to spend Saturday evening with the Cheyenne Symphony Orchestra. It's a night in Vienna. You will hear Strauss's famous Blue Danube Waltz, as well as Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 21 called the Elvira Madigan, because of its use in the film by the same name. Featured guest artist is world-renowned pianist John Nakamatsu. And finishing the evening is one of my favorite selections, Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. I have a number here if you want to call for tickets, but you can go Saturday evening prior to 7:30, and they'll sell them at the window. And I would very much recommend that you spend the evening with our symphony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the Senate, and thank you for coming by today. We appreciate it. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 30. Will the reading clerk please read the file?
Senate File 30, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, Highway Patrol, Game Warden, and Investigator Retirement, and Act relating to the Wyoming State Highway Patrol, Game and Fish Warden, and Criminal Investigator Retirement Act. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
The Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 30. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill simply is a companion bill to three or four bills that you'll see coming through to make sure that our various funds and accounts for retirement are financially sound. The Retirement Board and the actuaries have recommended an increase in contribution levels for the Highway Patrol, Game and Fish, and Criminal Investigators Retirement Fund. And all this bill does is increase the contributions to be paid. In this instance, the contribution is going to be paid by the members themselves. I urge your support of the bill.
Call for the...
Oh, is it your bill?
Anyone have a question? If not, call for the question. The question is being called. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion, when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 30, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Bill is passed. Senate File 30 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 32. Reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 32, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Worker Compensation Amendments, an act relating to workers' compensation. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move with the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 32 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Reading clerk, read the standing committee amendment.
Senate File 32, standing committee amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Scott, proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, I've got to explain the bill a bit to explain the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, this bill came to us because over the interim, a number of individuals called members of the committee. I received some of the calls. My co-chair in the House received some of the calls from medical doctors who were reviewing cases for workers' comp. Trying to determine was the treatment correct, advising was the treatment correct, giving second opinions, that sort of thing. And the doctors were saying, we're at the point where we feel we can no longer answer the questions honestly because we feel exposed to litigation, that a number of the positions in this area are litigious. And if we criticize what they're doing or what they have done or want to do, we're afraid we will be personally sued. And that's a real problem because our workers' comp system depends on being able to get objective advice. And it's a problem, frankly, Mr. Chairman, is not confined to workers' comp. I know I had a case myself where I got a communication from a constituent who'd been denied a government benefit. And I looked at it and frankly thought the state agency was probably right. I said, wait a minute. And I asked LSO, was I subject to a lawsuit if I told the constituent what I honestly thought? And the answer I got back once you stripped the legal double talk out was yes. And that's something I would urge all of us to consider. This bill doesn't reach that. But it is getting increasingly dangerous in our society to express your opinions honestly on quite a number of factors. We're replacing free speech with expensive speech. And that's something I think we're going to have to deal with generally. This bill deals with just the particular part where workers' comp is starting to have difficulty getting honest advice from its reviewers. Because of the threat of litigation. And what the bill basically does, Mr. Chairman, is twofold. It goes in and provides protection so that the government will take care of them and they can safely advise us and if they're sued, we're going to take care of it. And the second thing it does is it turns out that our confidentiality restrictions were such that the workers' comp division and its people could not warn the Board of Medicine and similar licensing organizations that they had a doctor out there that was providing substandard care. That came to their attention. So it takes care of that problem. Mr. Chairman, the amendment does two things. One, I think, is totally non-controversial. You'll see in a number of places we've deleted the word hospital, inserted a healthcare facility. That's because we want to cover some of the newer healthcare facilities that have been developed, particularly the ambulatory surgical centers doing a lot of workers' comp work. The page 4, line 17 reference is a significant expansion, does what was the intent of the committee all along, I think, and that's to extend the protection here to any health care provider providing peer reviews or independent medical evaluation reviews and opinions, so that the doctor that's hired to give the second opinion, that's hired to do the quality control work, is protected, is treated like a state employee. That's what this does, and I call your attention to it. I urge adoption of the standing committee amendments. Be happy to answer any questions on it.
Any questions on the amendment? On the amendment. Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file 32, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Is passed. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 32 has passed. Senator Scott, would you like to...
Chairman, I've...
We're back on the bill.
Explained the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions and urge its passage.
Senator Meyer.
Find you here. 5, lines 6 through 13. it says, any member who knowingly and intentionally makes a false report of substandard or inappropriate care, and I'm assuming that's a member of the commission because that's who we're talking about in line 1. But I'm just curious as to if the commission member in their regard, or using all of their expertise, thinks that something was inappropriate care, but subsequently it's determined that it was appropriate care. At that point in time, is it considered a false report because they did it knowingly and intentionally, thinking to right a wrong? And I'm wondering whether or not some language in there that would say, and who acted in knowingly and intentionally and acted in bad faith would give them enough coverage, or did not act in good faith would give them enough coverage. Because I think the member is going to knowingly and intentionally file a report if he thinks it's inappropriate, but subsequently it's found out to be appropriate. So,
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the way I would construe that is that if the member knew it was a false report and intended to make it a false report, that that's the standard. You have to prove those things. And that's appropriate because if, God forbid, you should ever get a commission member who had a vendetta, personal vendetta against somebody, and used his position to say, let's stick it to him, you want to have this kind of provision to protect against that. I would suggest if you're concerned about the construction of that, consult the Senate attorney, and if we come up with some clarifying language, we can deal with that. But I would think this was, as written, adequate protection against the circumstances, Mr. Chairman, that the good senator is concerned with.
Any further questions on the bill? A question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 32, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. bill has passed. Senate file 32 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 33. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 33, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee, Department of Enterprise Technology Services, and Act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Okay. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises the report, it does so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 33. There is an amendment. I'd ask that it be the Standing Committee amendment. I'd ask to be read in at this time.
Please, clerk, read the amendment in, please.
Senate File 33, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 10, line 16.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And for an explanation of both the amendment and the bill, I turn it over to Senator Schiffer.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill comes as a result of a management audit of the Chief Information Officer's office and the way this state goes about managing the computers and the information banks and all those sort of things that are part of state government. In tandem with that, when the audit came out, your management audit committee ended up working with the current governor to try and figure out where we go with the management of information technology and how we structure that. And in addition to that, committee number 2 had some concerns about the flow of money and the resources that were going to information management. This bill brings all three of those viewpoints, concerns, and as if by magic, it just solves almost all of them until we find out what the next batch is. Chairman, I'll walk through the bill very briefly. It sets up a division of information technology within A&I. The way this comes out, the chief information officer and the division of information technology is a standalone department. They'll have their own budget, but it's administered by A&I under the director of A&I. In other words, the fiscal support will remain with ANI for both the chief information officer and the IT efforts. So that's where it brings that it's kind of a mix. It's not a totally standalone because of that support function, but it does create that semi-independent. They submit a budget to the governor. And he looks at it and does his thing and has a proposed budget that goes to our committee's number 2. I'm going over through page 3 again. It will be a division of information technology within the Department of A&I. Going to the top of page 4, the Department of Enterprise Technology Service, or DETS, as we like to call it. The Senate will have on top of page 5 the ability to advise and consent on who's going to manage this, the Department of Enterprise Technology. Going on, we have some definitions there, some that I found are, you know, things like data analytics and things like that. That's how you manage information. If you want to go in and look at databases and get some information, particularly if you wish to get information that helps guide policy, those databases have to be coordinated. That's one of the goals that we're trying to achieve here by putting it under the chief information officer, I think we can go in and start getting some really valuable, timely, meaningful information from all the data banks that we've got. I think the one I recall off the top of my head, Department of Health has 9 different data banks, each one very, very valuable. But the sad part is most of them won't talk to the others. So you can't say who's on 7 out of the 9 data banks and those kind of things. And we're trying to get around that. We need useful information. So that's where we're headed. That's data analytics and enterprise data analytics. That carries that to the next level. The duties in assisting the governor, chief information, I'm over on page 8 and 9. He's going to help the governor manage his information, keep it so it talks to each other. Starting on the bottom of page 9, gives him some authority, and particularly on page 10, the coordination of management. This is one of the things we were looking for. Biennial information technology plan. We're going to plan this stuff instead of each agency coming in and saying, we want to go our own route and we're going to buy a computer that won't talk to anybody else in state government. Maintain the information and the governance program again so we get some coordination, review criteria and so on and so forth. They make recommendations and all those things to help move us into the 21st century. And Mr. Chairman, you can read all that. We get enhanced information over on 12 and 13. They're charged with advising the governor. They've also got to advise us. Hopefully the advice will be somewhat similar, and I think it will be. They've got to make sure that the university and community colleges adhere to standards and policies so we could talk to those folks. We spend a lot of money in those institutions, and we want to know exactly what their data says. They're a resource to us, but we are also a resource to them. We want to be able to review agency expenditures. They're going to set a limit. I think it's going to start out at $200 or $500. I don't know what that stuff's worth. Saying to the agencies, you can go buy what you need to go on your desk, your workstation, or whatever. But if you're going to go in and buy one of these big information systems, then the chief information officer is going to have to sign off on it. I believe you'll find, and let me give you an example, because we're going to talk some big money, and I'll get to the fiscal report on this a little bit later. There's a proposal out there to update our Medicaid delivery computer system, so we can find out who's in, who's out, why, all that stuff. And right now we're going to cost share with the government. Hopefully, that's about $95 million for just that one program. It's a big program. I understand that. It's complex, but we talk big money when we start talking a computer program. To have it set up and working, and I'll get to that in more detail. But we want to make sure that if we've got that program, where it's appropriate, we can go in and mine the information out and say who's actually spending the biggest single budget item we've got in health care in the Medicaid budget. We want to know about that, Mr. Chairman. So anyway, the CIO is going to set a limit, and agencies can buy small stuff, but they can't go spend $95 million for a system without at least making it jive with all the rest of the systems we've got. We want to be able to use enterprise data analytics. I'm quite excited about that move forward. I think it'll be very helpful. He's going to make recommendations to the agencies. Some, particularly smaller agencies, they don't know how to purchase one of these things. And we want to provide them with a support to do that. He's going to take care of office accounting and billing, so on and so forth. Um, Okay, on the bottom of page 16, he's going to work on the statewide system to get information out for training and public radio and television and all those things. So we're going to coordinate that. Instead of laying duplicate lines or transmission towers, we may actually even save some money on some of this stuff. Inventory control and so on and so forth. Mr. Chairman, you're very well aware of all the potential things we can get done, and I won't go into them in too much detail, other than I do want to point out that this is how we're going to try and manage all these systems. Mr. Chairman, when you get over in terms of, and I believe it's on page 24, 25, here's how this deal is going to work. As this office gets up and running, and the chief information officer starts looking at more and more of these systems, he's going to be looking at, on an annual basis, the IT people that are currently out in these agencies maintaining and purchasing and buying this stuff. And he's going to have to make a recommendation to the governor. We've now moved in and we're managing IT for the XYZ agency. It doesn't matter which one. We will now take over that. And here's the positions that will move into the IT division. And here's the ones that will stay with the agency. And that's how this thing is going. It's going to take some time. I understand that. But that's how we're going to put it. We believe there's some savings there. just in terms, and it's kind of the things I understand, just in terms of maintenance, making sure the service is provided. If you've got four different agencies with a whole maintenance crew on 24-hour call, it may be that you can actually get all the work done on maintenance with just three crews on 24-hour call, and it might not take quite so many people and those kind of things. He bills the agency pays him. This ends up being, much like any other interagency pooling agreement. And there may be some savings there. I never like to promise savings, but I think there is potential there. If nothing else, I think we can get better service. But whether there's actual savings, we'll wait and see. Anyway, that's dealt with on page 24 and 25, as this agency works with the governor in his budget, transferring the positions in and billing the separate agencies. From page 26 on through, Mr. Chairman, this is the conforming language for each of the specific agencies. I'm not going to go through them. If we forgot an agency, I don't know about it. But I think we got them all covered, or I hope we do. There is a fiscal note on this, and I'm going to point this out to you so you understand how this, as we ramp this up, an agency buys services from these, just like they do from other A&I agencies, but we're talking somewhere in the total of $61.5 million. That's the fees. That's buying computers. As this ramps up, this is big bucks to our agencies. I'll submit to you, as far as I know, this is money well spent. But what this agency does is I think we can spend it more wisely, more efficiently, and get a higher level of service and expertise. There is the standing committee amendment has been read in. I'll take any questions on the bill, and then, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to deal with the standing committee amendment.
Senator Schiffer, just for a moment, I'm not sure that amendment was moved. Did you want to do that?
Did you move that or not?
I did.
Well, if you didn't move it, I'm going to dock your pay because you were supposed to. I'll move the amendment. It has been read in.
Okay.
And I'll move it.
We weren't sure, but okay, just clarify.
Some general questions on the bill. We're moving a new direction now. So, I want you to...
Questions on the bill, Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank the management auditor for bringing this important bill forward. It makes a lot of sense for our state. Just a quick question on the fiscal profile. Under the total exception request, the $22 million in additional, is that a flow-through that's occurring because of the cross-reference made to different agencies going out and buying services? How does that work? I'm having trouble following that, and, of course, the part of that, too, is deletion of $14 million from other funds on the total exception request.
Go ahead.
One or the other. Senator Nicholas, thank you. Chairman.
Chairman, what's happening here, and most of this has already been taken care of in the budget process, because as we've moved through the budget, the governor had already recommended a consolidation of the commencement of the consolidation of the IT functions throughout state government. As a practical matter, the last 8 or 9 years, we have beefed up and increased the number of IT personnel in all of the agencies around the state, particularly some of the big agencies, department, or the, as examples, would be both DEQ and the state engineer. We were trying to get them to move forward to do some broad initiatives. Now, as we look out, we see that we've got all these IT personnel throughout. We have duplication of services, so we have already begun the consolidation. And through the state budget process, we have been taking funds out of some of the IT services out of each agency, bringing them back into the acquisition back into A&I. This will be a division within A&I for accounting purposes. So a lot of this has already happened and transpired through the agency, where we've taken pieces of IT budgets out of each agency and consolidated them through internal service fees. So most of this is picked up through internal service fees that are administered through A&I.
Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So based on what you said, and we go to the other agencies, we'll see a reduction that offsets this exception budget request?
Senator Nicholas.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Landon, did you want to rise?
Chairman, I, too, want to commend the Management Audit Committee. I think there's a lot of good concepts in this bill. I think that it certainly looks good on paper. I just have a little feeling down here that, and it could be that I need some lunch. Senator, but I just, you know, I hearken back to a doctorate program I was in, and we toured some institutions of higher education in the state to the south, and I remember one administrator of one of those institutions visiting with her, and she said, you know, whatever you do up in your state, I hope you don't ever centralize like this state has done. She said, because we can't even buy a ream of paper without going through the capital city. And I'm not saying this does that. I just have this little queasy feeling, though, and I'm trying to think about all of those IT people on the ground out there who are experts in their field and experts at what they do, and now what we're going to do, we're going to ask that staff, and I can vouch for the fact that they're stretched very, very thin now. And what we're going to do is we're going to ask them to go through a newly created agency, because this is another little agency that we're going to create here. And so I guess maybe a little more conversation about how do we formulate in our minds how this is going to result in a cost savings when it's just a kind of another bureaucratic layer. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer, and then I'll go to Senator Von Plater.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I went down to a state down south and found a lady who was concerned. I hired her as a consultant to help write this bill. What'd you say your lady friend's name was? But actually, the operative language in the statement, and I commend the good senator, because we do have some excellent people out there, some excellent IT people. They are excellent in their field. In their field, they're excellent. The sad part is they're not excellent in terms of, and let's look at it from our perspective, of this Senate's perspective. We write policy. Is that computer tech going to gather the information and make it available in the way computers talk to each other so we can set policy with it? Nope. He's going to take care of his agency. He could care less what the Senate needs to set policy in terms of Medicaid. And you can go through every agency. They are excellent in their field. And what this agency is trying to do is say, we want excellence, but we want to be able to use this information in a meaningful way to tell what we're doing and how we can do it better. And if we and one of the things on, I forget whether it's page 18 or where, and those guys are good. Make no mistake. There are some good IT people out there. We'll bring them in and we'll train them and say, look, guys, get the information you need for whatever agency, XYZ agency. But as you design that, make sure that we can also use it to analyze performance. And we can get a hold of that data, and they call it, the fancy word is data analytics. For peons, they say it's data mining. It's somewhere in between. But we want to be able to get to that information to make policy decisions. And we can train those people to do that. And that's the whole point of this. And I'll get together with Senator Landon, and we'll compare notes and travel plans, and we'll see what we can do about going south.
Senator Von Fladen and then Senator Rothfuss after Senator Von Fladen. No? Okay, Senator Rothfuss then. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, another concern along similar lines to what my good friend from Natrona County was expressing is there's a general assumption, I think, that all software and tech people are roughly equal in what their knowledge is, but the reality is different departments have different specialized software that they use for specific analysis depending on the needs of the department. If we have an over-reliance on a generalized workforce of IT people, they might not know enough about the specific software for a given agency. DEQ is an example, perhaps accounting software elsewhere. There's a lot of possibilities here that you lose that resource, and I'm wondering what the provisions are in this piece of legislation that protect that. So if I have an agency with a specialized mission that requires unique software, GIS, for example, am I going to be able to keep my specialized IT people and then just rely on the A&I common pool for things like Microsoft Office?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, that's a very good question because we do want to retain those really technical data banks, those kind of things that are very, very specific. And I believe we will. There's a number of things built into here. And first of all, I'll draw your attention to the top of page 21. If they need their own setup, they can. There's a couple of requirements there. But at least they're going to have to check it through. If they need to contract, they can go outside and contract. We don't want to preclude that. If it's necessary for like a technical data bank, you bet. We would like them to meet compatibility standards so that if we need to access that for policy purposes, for example, or budgetary purposes, for example, we can do it. But all I got to do is say this is very, very specific. It can result in savings. Some databases, as I understand it, really are, it's one of a, now, kind of the rule of thumb seems to be if you can buy one, it's cheaper than writing your own. I guess writing your own program is pretty expensive. I don't know, but that's what they tell me. And so if you can go buy one, you can probably save money on it. You go contract it. I don't even know if you buy the program or you buy the cloud it sits on. But that's kind of the the way this deal works. The other thing is, and I'll have to look here, it's over on the prior to that, but there is a thing where you run it through the an agency, and I'm trying to think of what the example is. Very specific. Let me give you one that I'm somewhat familiar with. Over in the livestock board, the recording of brands is a very specific thing. You got to draw a picture, you know, and you draw the critter and you draw the picture and you draw an earmark in. That's a very, very specific, and they want to computerize that. It's a good deal. They want to computerize it. That would be a very specific, they go to the CIO and say, we're going to computerize the brand book, is really what they're doing. See what I'm saying? That's okay, we want to do that. You know, particularly if it makes it more efficient. But that is a very, very specific computer program. But it's also one the public, right now they publish the brand book, you know, hardbound, you can buy them and all that stuff. But if we can get it on computer, I could go in and just look up a brand and say, now, who am I stealing cattle from? You know, it'll say right there, you know. Or, no, not, I wouldn't do that, just for my neighbors. But, and I know their brands. But you see what I'm saying? That is a specific computer program. And we can do it better and cheaper, and then not have to print the brand books. And what will really be exciting is when those old brand inspectors are out walking through a corral with one of these in his hand, and you know that's going to get exciting. I think that'll be fun, and I want to live long enough to see it because I know those guys, and it'll be a thrill of moment. I think anyway. I'm going to take a video camera, and Nancy will film it all, and I'll bring it down and show it to you. But that's what it's all about. We got to protect that. I think it is protected in here.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll be brief. I see what time it is and whatnot. I think my statement is more in way of a comment, perhaps, than it is in way of a question. I've been involved as being a member of the committee in regard to school improvement, achievement, accountability, and that. You know, there's this expression, data rich, information poor, and I think the sponsor of the bill has made a really good point in regard to the value of information in making of policy, but in making of any decision. And I would hope in this process that we pay a lot of, the experts can look at the data, but from my view, I'm interested in the information. The data may be the input, but the output for me is information. And so this is going to be, I think, a tremendous exercise for the not only the Board of Education, the Department of Education, local boards in order to gather the data we need in order to put together the piece that we're talking about of tracking the independence achievement of children. But you need to have, and I can talk about this top down, I can talk about it bottom up, but you need to be able to layer the information so parents get some idea of what's going on with their children. The children have some idea independently what their growth and other factors are, that the students then can communicate through parents to teachers. Teachers have a means of data-driven instruction. And it goes on to the administrator, then he has a view of what's going on in the classrooms in his building and has a means of communicating with the teachers, and then the board, on the other hand, has some view of what the information is in regard to what's going on within the district, and they can disaggregate that down to the level of looking at an individual child, or in the event of a call from a parent, they can track that back. All the way up then, from the board to the state board, perhaps, state department, and finally, up to our level where we got some idea in regard to the amount of monies we're putting into education and in regard to that's the input and if what the output would be then would be the achievement. That's what I think that I'm hearing here is an attempt to get that level so that all levels of information or all levels of decision making have some reliable information derived from data in which to make those decisions. And I guess from that. I that's what I'm looking for. I hope that that's the outcome. I think that's the objective, and that's what I'm hopeful that will come out of this bill. Thank you so much.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a constituent would like to know what are the protections from data mining and analysis on the personal information that our agencies store on the people in Wyoming.
Senator Nicholas.
You know, with respect to this bill, it really doesn't propose anything different that's already taking place right now. All the data that's being collected is already out there. To the extent that the Department of Health, for example, collects data and is bound by the HIPAA regulations, then in the event that ANI collects, hosts, or saves that information, they end up signing agreements with the agencies that collect it to ensure the protection of that information. So the ANI, in a sense right now, ANI backs up all of this data. It's already being backed up in ANI. They're already under agreements. We've talked about an amendment in the committee that would make sure that to provide assurances to these folks that the ANI employees are trained in it, but we're provided assurances that they are all trained right now in the confidentiality that exists on the data that's already collected. So with respect to this, I mean, as a practical matter, ANI could today go on and mine this data or mine from it. Part of it is, though, a stronger collaboration in terms of making sure all of our data is available to different agencies that need it, but it is protected in terms of confidentiality. It's a problem that exists today. We'll continue that protection. And in the end, from a budgetary standpoint, the IT divisions of each of our agencies have been the largest growing, fastest growing departments within all the agencies. And in those instances where we were trying to grow capacity because the capacity didn't exist in ANI and this expertise, it was great to do that, but now we need to take a portion of those employees back, consolidate, and make sure that same level of service is provided to all agencies, keeping in mind that some specialized work still remains in the agencies. Agencies will still have to have their specialized employees to make sure that those specialized programs will be able to continue to operate. But in the end of the day, we've grown government in this respect, and in all instances, we've not really been able to capture a lot of those resources for all agencies. Some agencies are well beyond and much further along on not only processing their data banks, creating information, creating an IT level of capacity to get it out. In the end of the day, unless it's private information, really it ought to be available to anybody that wants to get on our websites. You want to see what can happen, go to the Oil and Gas Commission websites, go to your state engineer websites, and then ask yourself, why can't we have that same level of information available for all agencies? And in the end of the day, that's the idea. But we also need to keep the confidentiality, and that's reached by agreements between the centralized agency and the agencies that actually collect that confidential information.
We have a Senator Schiffer.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions on the bill or where we're going with this, I'd like to dispose of the Standing Committee amendment.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, some of it is just housekeeping, kind of cleaning up what we're doing. But and what this was working out where we're going with private providers. Some of it's language cleanup, but I want to draw your attention to line 22, page 8, lines 20 through 24, where the chief information officer was charged with representing the needs and interests of the telecommunications users of the state in proceedings before the Public Service Commission. We're going to take all that stuff out. They're going to have to represent themselves. They're more comfortable doing it. I'm more comfortable having them do it. Again, some cleanup, and then on page 21, line 20, we want to provide him with the ability to provide service or contract with one or more telecommunications providers. We're going to bring in private industry where it's appropriate. We want to nurture that industry. We want to do business with them, particularly if we can do a cost savings. And again, over on the amendment, this is line 37 on page 23. We go in on line 17 and add the paragraph you can see in there. The parties are comfortable with this. The current chief information officer is comfortable with this. I think it's a good deal, and I think it helps make the bill work. I'll answer what questions I can and ask for your support.
Questions on the amendment? Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question.
Oops, got to find
it. First part of the amendment, the wording is to delete executive branch and insert agency. Am I interpreting this right? Then the executive branch, the five elected officials, will be separate than this bill. They won't be covered by this bill. They'll have their own IT sections.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, no, quite frankly, not exactly what I'm told that does. It says that we're going to apply it to the agencies, to theirs. We don't want to, for example, get into managing, and I'm just picking somebody at random, the governor's personal computer. I don't think that's any of our business. It's agency stuff, and that's what we're looking to go in and work with.
Questions on the amendment?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 33, please say aye.
Aye.
All who oppose, say no. That amendment has passed. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 33 has passed. Now back on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Question.
Oh, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises a report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 33, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. It's passed. Senate File 33 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader,
does Drew, that are you find it?
Finance bill?
And that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again. Okay.
So I'll send it back to you.
We're now in. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Sorry. Sorry.
Oh, all mine.
Oh,
Chairman, here's.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2:15 p.m.
Are there any announcements? Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet today, 15 minutes after noon recess, up in room S18. To continue working on Senate File 75, Business Ready Community Program Planning, and Senate File 102, State Lands Management. Mr. President, also a heads up for everybody, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet Wednesday, February 22nd, 15 minutes after the noon recess in room 302 to consider Senate File 93, Casper Aquifer Land Acquisition.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Case, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. We're going to come in about a half an hour earlier because we've got a lot to do this week. Senate File 48, Professional Engineers and Surveyors Practice Act. Senate File 88, Senior Citizen Service Districts. Senate File 92, Professional Licensing, Military Members. Senate File 95, Emergency Medical Services Special Districts. And if time permits, Senate File 77, Expenditure of Public Funds and Government Competition.
Other announcements? Senator Burns, go ahead, please.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Cultural Resources,
Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. We'll meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. up in room S14, where we will take up Senate File 36, State Parks Acquisition of LX Bar Ranch, State File 43, State Parks Acquisition of Lands, Senate File 71, Aquatic Invasive Species, Senate File 16, Recreation Liability, Aircraft Operations, and if time allows, Senate Joint Resolution 1, Wildlife Property of the State.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Nicholas, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think at this point, Appropriations has scheduled all bills that have appropriations. So if you don't, if you've got a bill that was either referred or re-referred, let me know if you don't think it's scheduled. But here's the schedule list for right now. First, the Joint Appropriations Committee is going to meet about 1 to 1:15 as soon as we get out of a leadership meeting to go over the footnotes to the budget and prepare for tomorrow's presentation. Then finally, the Senate Appropriations is going to meet upon adjournment to consider the following bills. All of these are in room S13. Senate File 42, Large Project Funding, re-referred. Senate File 57, Education Accountability, re-referred. Senate File 107, Public Works Contract. And Senate File 105, School CapCon, that was carried over from this morning. Tomorrow at 8 a.m., the committee will consider Senate File 34, Medicaid Options Study. Senate File 58, Health Insurance Exchange Study. And Senate File 37, Medicaid Waiver Funding. Tomorrow on adjournment, we'll be considering Senate File 59, Public Employee Retirement Plans Benefit Increases. Senate File 87, State Employee Compensation Commission Membership. And Senate File 18, Reimbursement for Livestock. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Are there other announcements? Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs is going to meet today on adjournment to take up Senate File 68, Time Limits for Veteran and Dependent Tuition Fees, up in S14.
Thank you. Other announcements? Seeing none. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are those opposed? No. The Senate shall stand recessed until 2:15 p.m. today.
It's your bill.
Recess.